Muslims in Nigeria are slaughtering Christians. There have been 7,000 just since January this year. Over 100,000 since 2001 slaughtered in Nigeria. 3.5 to 5 million Christians, not just slaughtered, but displaced, driven out of their homes, left homeless, or destitute. 5 to 10,000 are kidnapped and held for ransom in terror camps, right? They're malnourished, they're beaten, they're tortured. And when the money can't be paid, they may be killed. The Nigerian government is turning a blind eye to this. And when it comes to public relations, they're lying about it to other nations to hide what's happening. In fact, some government officials are actually helping supply weapons to the terrorists. Judd Saul is the guy I'm bringing on today to tell you about this, because Christians everywhere have to start talking about Nigeria. This is a really big issue. And it's also a picture of what Islam can do when it has the power to do it. So Judd Saul, his team is actually on the ground. He's not just a commentator. They have a ministry on the ground. They do early warning systems. They're there every single day. They help people flee. They make phone calls and do secret things to try to get people out of a town that's about to be targeted by one of these murder squads. And the reason why you should watch this video today is because you can do something about it. We can actually do something about it. I have action steps that we'll talk about today. You can make a difference. So Judd, thank you so much for joining us. Please tell us, if you would, how bad is it in Nigeria?
The situation in Nigeria right now is very dire. As you said before, 7,000 Christians have been killed this year since January. Usually on average, it's about 4,000, 5,000 Christians a year, but the attacks have increased exponentially. And what we are seeing is entire Christian communities being wiped off the map. You know, after an attack takes place, several people are killed, but then you have several survivors that have nowhere to go. Their homes have been completely destroyed and they can no longer go back to their land. And you have Christians living in squalor, living in the most terrible situation that you can imagine. And the world and even the Christian community has been ignoring what is going on there. They don't quite understand how bad the situation is. And it's so bad that there's over 3.5 million Christians living in camps, no longer allowed to return to their homes.
Yeah, just driven out from terrorist acts.
Just driven out. So imagine you're living in total poverty, abject poverty. I mean, real poverty, not American poverty, where people don't have electricity. They are already sleeping on dirt floors, living in huts, farming every day just to survive. And now imagine all that is now gone. What very little you had has now been completely disappeared. You have nothing left but the clothes on your backs. That's what we're dealing with in Nigeria.
So you were telling me, we were preparing for this interview, and this is heavy on my heart that we do this. You know, scripture tells us that we should remember those who are being persecuted, like as though we were suffering with them. And that's what we're going to try to do here, because we just don't get it. We just don't know it. Like we think that everything's a lot more happy and everybody's getting along in Western countries. And this perception is not real. And it's good that we understand this. You know, I think Nigeria is an example of when Islam actually has some power, and they don't even have all the power there. But when they have some power, there's been other Islamic movements that have driven people out of Jordan or out of other Middle East countries that some of them have fled to Jordan, actually. And this is something that goes on in the world, and it will be repeated. It will just keep happening unless we make noise. But the government's hiding it, and we're going to talk about that too. So what these guys do on the ground, like what happens? Like you're living in a village in Nigeria, you're a Christian. What happens on the day when these guys show up?
Well, what happens is, I mean, normal, peaceful day, everybody's going about their business. And then one night, they just come in without warning and they just start burning houses down. They start killing, and they come in very tactfully and they try to funnel the people in. So as people are trying to escape, they try to funnel them in to kill as many as possible. And it doesn't matter who they're killing. It's children, it's the elderly, it's women. They don't discriminate on who they kill. They try to kill as many as they can. In the process,
this they're doing because they're Christians and because they want to take the land from the Christians and eradicate them.
Correct. It's because they're Christians. It's because they're not Muslims. They're not Fulani radical Muslims like they are. And without warning, they'll just come in one night and raid your town. So imagine you're living in a town of, you know, 1,000 people, 1,500 people, for those of you that live in small towns. And just imagine overnight you have 100 guys with AK-47s on motorcycles running and just bursting into homes, shooting and spraying people with bullets, and then setting your homes on fire. And in the process, killing all your animals and killing all your crops, just chopping them all down, and then you have nothing left. That's what Christians are going through.
And this has been going on. Is it since 2001? I mean, that's when we have information from. When did this start?
The catalyst started in actually 9/11, 2001, was when they had a major attack that happened in Plateau State, Nigeria. And that was kind of the spark that started this violent jihad, where they said, we are going to start taking territory. And that's when you saw things just exponentially increase. And it's not like they're going and invading and taking over one town quickly or an entire, like, you know, big city. It's just little village by little village, death by a thousand attacks, little by little by little. And as the attacks continue, the government, Nigerian government continues to turn a blind eye.
Do you have any idea how many villages have been attacked? I mean, I know it's hard to say with these kinds of things. It's not like we have perfect records.
We estimate between 300 to 500 Christian communities completely wiped off the map.
Oh my gosh.
And they've all been renamed Muslim names and Muslim cities now and Muslim villages, like completely wiped off the map.
It's Muslim conquest. It's just small scale, like you said, death by a thousand cuts conquest, but it's violent Muslim conquest for sure. You know, when 9/11 happened, I remember this. Okay, so there's, you know, it's been 25 years, right? So it's been a while now. So there's people who don't remember or weren't there. But I remember after 9/11 happened, there was some people who started saying, this is radical Islam, guys. This is, and then there's other people who said, no, this is Islam. And that was like a debate. Is it radical Islam or is it Islam? Now, I'm going to say that it's actually Islam because they're walking in the footsteps of Muhammad and it fits with his life and his pattern and his behaviors. But there was a thing that happened in the U.S. And I want people to think about this contrast. In the U.S., we had our leaders, like the president of the United States, going public after 9/11 saying to everybody, Islam is peace. Islam is peace. We just had Islamic terrorists in the name of Islam, hoping that they'll have to drive their planes into our buildings and kill tons and tons of people, that they would go to heaven and experience 40 virgins that they would have at their side, you know, and then Muslim governments paying the families of the suicide bombers and all this kind of stuff. And they're our government spouting Islamic talking points. Islam is peace.
At an Islamic center less than a week after the September 11 attacks, where he stood with Muslims in America.
The face of terror is not the true faith of Islam. Islam is peace. These terrorists don't represent peace. They represent evil and war.
Because they are peace until they have the guns, and then it's war is the strategy. But that doesn't mean every Muslim in the country feels that way, because they're in the country where they have to do the peace thing. So all I'm suggesting here is that's kind of similar to what's happening, because during that time, our government's saying that in Nigeria is rising up more Islamic movements that are attacking and murdering and taking the land. And they looked at that and they got inspired and they're like, yeah, we can do this. And since then we've had the Arab Spring, we've had all kinds of stuff happen that people are just largely unaware of. So all that being said, it's such a parallel with what's going on even now, because we've even recently had some government officials trying to highlight this, be able to say, hey guys, this is Islam, it's dangerous. Others spouting terrorist talking points, probably unaware. So we're going to talk about that too. We're going to talk about the government, the cover up, the deceit and all this stuff. So I'll hand the ball back to you, Jeff.
Well, I'll go back to that point where President Bush was surrounding himself with actually members of the Muslim Brotherhood. When he came out and did that, it was a big PR stunt. I remember when that happened, and it made me sick to my stomach, because you have sitting members of the Muslim Brotherhood, which is, by the way, an organization dedicated to the Islamification of the entire world, and they have strong links to terror organizations. So George Bush comes in arm in arm, says, you know, Islam is a religion of peace. Well, let's just be honest, is that these government officials, and we still have them in our government today, they are selling America out to the oil money, to the business, overlooking how Islam has conquered every nation since 640 AD. And they are selling out to the oil money. The politicians don't have our interests in mind and future generations of Americans in mind. They have their own pocketbooks in mind. And that is exactly what motivated President Bush to do that. And we still have politicians that are slaves to the Arab oil money today.
Yeah, you can't talk honestly about these things in those circles. It's not allowed. It's not allowed. But this stuff's real and it's really happening. And it really is. See, because if somebody radically follows Jesus, they're not slaughtering towns of people. If you radically follow Muhammad, like genuinely, like you go, I will do anything this guy tells me to, then you end up being a danger to the world. Islam is legitimate. It's not just another flavor of Christianity, which is what Westerners tend to think.
This is how the terrorists can sleep at night. This is how they can sleep at night, because they believe that they are going to be rewarded by Allah in heaven for killing people, for killing children, for killing women, for killing the elderly. They believe that they're being rewarded for this. This is essential to their religion. And so people are like, well, how can this happen? This doesn't make any sense. Well, their religion says that they are going to be rewarded with 72 virgins for the more people they kill while they're here on earth.
Yeah, I said 40. It's just it's 72. That's right. What was I thinking? 40 is not nearly enough. Yeah, I mean, well, they did it. You know, there's rules about how you can have sex slaves in Islam. People try to say the Bible has that. No, it doesn't. You're lying about the Bible, but it's real in Islam. That's the thing. And it's crazy. Even the new atheist movement back in the day, they wouldn't talk about Islam. Like, they know Christianity is not a threat to them. They just don't like it. But the real threat is there. And so there's silence on all sides. But now tell us, what else is going to help us prove, like, that this stuff's really happening in Nigeria? Because the popular thing to do for right now for the government as well as others is go, this is exaggerated. It's really mostly Muslim on Muslim violence. It's not even Christians and all of those types of claims. So help us out. If you're a skeptic watching this, Judd, tell that person, how will they know the truth about what's happening? Because they're getting mixed messages.
First of all, it's in the data. It's in the statistics. For every Muslim killed, because I'll just be honest, I'll explain how this works. So they say, well, Muslims are being killed too. Right. Well, you have rival factions within the Fulani ethnic militia, who are the radical Islamic terrorists that are doing the killing in Nigeria. You have rival factions, and then they fight one another. You have different leaders of different Fulani sects and tribes that battle it out every now and then, because they can't get along on who's more radical, right? So you have some of those killings, but they all join together to go kill Christians and take territory. And then they'll fight amongst themselves a little bit, but then they'll keep going and conquering territory and working their way down. Now, for every Muslim that's killed, there are 6 Christians that are killed. The ratio is 6 to 1. Those are the actual statistics.
Mm-hmm. Now, what are people saying about this, though? So you can know that 6 to 1 is the real ratio, but what is the message going out from, say, the government or others?
Well, I'll get to that in a second.
Oh, okay, sure.
So it's 6 to 1. But I'll tell you what, the ratio is 4,000 to 1 for how many mosques are being destroyed versus churches.
Oh, wow. 4,000 churches are destroyed. And then one mosque gets destroyed. And even the mosque being destroyed, even the Muslim, the 1 out of 6 being killed, they're being killed because of Muslim jihadists. They're being killed because of Muslim extremism.
Right. They're being killed because of Muslim extremists.
Yeah.
So 19,000 churches have been burned to the ground and destroyed in Nigeria since 2001.
Oh my gosh.
19,000 churches destroyed. Okay. How many mosques have been destroyed? Maybe 10, if you're lucky. Like, and that's, so you can't tell me that, oh, well, it's just, it's everybody getting killed. It's just, these are just bandits and criminals and terrorists. And this is the lie that the Nigerian government has formulated and is pushing out to the public. And I'll be honest, the Nigerian government right now is spending money paying religious leaders to carry this narrative. They're paying politicians. They're paying lobbyists in the United States to carry the false narrative that it's just terrorism. Everyone's being killed. These terrorists, these bandits are just terrible. And it's a lie from the pit of hell. And I'll explain even more how this gets whitewashed and put in the mainstream narrative. So let's say there's a major attack, all right, like what happened in June of this year. 280 Christians were slaughtered. Half of them were burned alive. The other ones that weren't burned alive were shot and macheted to death, escaping being burned alive, right? Well, the Nigerian government comes out. They hold a press conference. They hold the press conference, and their talking points, their narrative, then get sent to Al Jazeera. And Al Jazeera is the one that issues the main publication that goes to the mainstream media. And Al Jazeera will say, unknown gunmen came and attacked these people, and only 100 were killed. So by the time it hits the mainstream media, it says, unknown gunmen. And they always, always reduce the numbers of the actual killers. They reduced the numbers of those that were actually killed in every instance. So Nigerian government puts on a press conference. They pay the journalists to show up and regurgitate their talking points. Then it goes to Al Jazeera. Al Jazeera is part of the Associated Press. So their article then gets aggregated and gets put out in CNN, all the other major news publications across the world. And so the truth is completely suppressed.
So there is an active, actual conspiracy going yes. on, where they're working together, the government, along with Muslim terrorists, who are terrorists because they're Muslims, because of their ideology as Muslims. Terrorist is not just a generic term, like people suddenly
correct
snap sideways and become terrorists. It's ideology that drives it, and it's Muslim ideology most of the time. And then yes. you've got the networking with Al Jazeera and other TV networks. Then from Al Jazeera, you get U.S. TV networks who are news stations and stuff like that, who do stuff. And it's like they don't do any journalistic integrity to actually find out what's really going on. They just repeat the talking points.
Right. They just pick up that article from Al Jazeera, and then that becomes the talking points on CNN and all the other world news organizations, and that's what goes to the mainstream magazines. No one bothers to ask the questions or to send a reporter or a journalist there to follow up.
Well, fortunately, faith in these like old news organizations has never been lower, and that's good. Because their behavior has never been lower, but it's always been manipulative, I think. And so we're just being real and honest about this stuff, because you have to be, or else you can't combat it. You can't fight it if you can't name it. So that's crazy.
Yeah, it's really sad. But people ask, like, well, how come we don't hear about this? Well, this is why, because Nigeria really doesn't have a free press. Because what happens is if a major event happens, the Nigerian government has to call the press conference. The Nigerian government pays the journalists to show up. There is no real independent journalism being done, which is also why our organization, we can talk about it later, created an outlet for journalists in Nigeria called truthnigeria.com. And we're trying to battle that false narrative that's taking place, because we actually send journalists on the ground to go interview witnesses and investigate what actually happened. And we put out the truth.
Yeah. You were telling about this. You like to have teams come in to do their own investigative journalism so that they can report with integrity on the topics.
Well, right. Well, how crazy is it that every time there's a major attack where 100, 200, 300 Christians are killed, and then it hits the mainstream media, and it's always unknown gunmen. It's always bandits, robbers, unknown gunmen. When everyone on the ground that survived this says it was Fulani, they were shouting Allahu Akbar when they were doing this. They were on motorcycles. They were, and this is the kind of weapons they were using. This is where they came from. This is where they went. I don't know who, what, where, when, and why journalism. I thought that's what we were supposed to do. But the Nigerian government just says, oh, unknown gunmen.
Yeah, they're more interested in controlling people than they are in speaking truth or giving people the respect to right. even know what's going on. And we get the same thing in the U.S. with if there's an attack that could be construed in a political way that could help, especially if it would help people on the right, because the news media is liberal. They'll hide the identity. They'll be like, we don't know. Right. Or we got the manifesto, but nobody can know about it or see it or what they said. It's the same right. strategies. Same strategies.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's dishonest. And if the Nigerian government would put as much money as they're spending into putting out a false narrative into actually fighting terrorists, we would see a lot less Christians being killed.
And we can see this too. We have action steps today for people to take. We'll talk about later, because I'm hopeful that there can be real meaningful change, radical and real and meaningful change. But it starts with Christians actually believing that they can make a difference, or else they don't do anything because they just feel like it doesn't matter. I think that as people are watching this video, they may have a hard time grasping on the ground when you hear just the numbers. This, you know, thousands and thousands of churches and over 100,000 people murdered and all these villages and stuff. But those can just be numbers. So let's talk about some specific examples. And I asked you if you could bring some specific stories. And so this is going to be a tough part to get through, but I hope you guys stick through the whole video. This is a very, very important video. We can change things in Nigeria, even with this video, because of your actions. So please stick around. But Jed, please help us connect this to real people.
One of the things we do with our mission is we respond to these attacks within 48 hours. But many times we run into a lot of wounded that need to be treated, and the government doesn't pay for their medical expenses. No one comes to their rescue to help pay for their medical expenses. So we've seen it as a big part of our ministry to come alongside these people that are wounded and cover their medical costs so they don't go full bankrupt. They've already lost their homes. They've already lost everything they own, and now they owe medical bills. Or if they can't pay their medical bill, the hospitals won't even treat them. And so as part of our mission, we just saw a great need to help victims who've been wounded. And what I'm about to show you is a video of a gal named Alice who lost her husband, two of her children, in an attack. And I'm going to share the video right now, and I'll talk more about it in a second. So this is Alice. Her hand was chopped off. She suffered machete wound to her head and to her other hand and her leg.
Oh, man. Oh, man.
So Alice lost her husband, two of her children in an attack. They chopped off her hand. She suffered multiple machete wounds. Was left for dead. And I'm going to share this right now. This is her son, Godlove, who survived multiple machete attacks. This is her only child that survived. And we came in and we come alongside and we paid for all the medical bills to help her and her son recover. And thank God they're both in much better shape and in better health now. But this is just one of the few examples, or one of many examples, I'm sorry to say, one of many examples that we do as a mission is we help people like Godlove and Alice that suffer these attacks. So far to date, we've helped over 1,200 people pay for their medical costs and their surgeries after being wounded.
Oh, man. It's so heavy. And this is just one family. And what they've gone through.
This is just one family. And we've helped cover the cost of over 1,200 victims. And these are children with bullet wounds, children that have had machete wounds, that have lost limbs, mothers who've witnessed, you know, their entire family be killed in front of them, brothers and children that are alive that watch their parents and siblings die. And these are the people that we help. This is what equipping the persecuted does, is come alongside people like this. And this is every week. This is every week, Mike. Every week our team is dealing with this.
Wow. Listen, I want people to understand this too. We'll talk more about it later, but one of the action steps is going to your website, equippingthepersecuted.org, and supporting you guys. Right. And the reason why I think this is really important, and I'm careful, I try to be careful before I recommend anybody support anybody, but you guys are actually on the ground helping people. You're not just reporting. Like, I'm just reporting.
No.
You guys are on the ground helping people. You're actually there. You're actually buying them food and helping them get into somewhere physical where they can sleep and tending to their wounds. And tell us about the early warning system as well that you guys do.
So, you know, part of starting TruthNigeria.com, you remember we talked about earlier about having ways for information to get out about really what's happening. Well, we developed trust with villages all over the Middle Belt, and we've taught them things to look for. We've taught them how to get information. What if you see something, say something. If you see something suspicious, look into it. So we become a beacon of essentially of intelligence where people are relaying information to us where we've issued terror alerts. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so like someone in a town might see 30 guys go by on motorcycles and they've got weapons on their backs. And so then right. they contact, and then you guys are like looking at a map going, where might they be going? Can we warn those villages?
Right. Where are they coming? What's going on? Who can we warn? And so we get the information. We issue a terror alert. And part of issuing the terror alert is we notify the Nigerian military, the police, and the local government officials. And since 2023, we launched in 2023, we've issued over 100 terror alerts with 89% accuracy.
Oh, my goodness.
Where we were able to warn villages, we warned the government, we warned the military. Now, we didn't have all of them. But we were able to issue over 100 terror alerts. And the sad thing is that in the vast majority of these terror alerts, the Nigerian government did nothing. The military did not intervene. The police didn't show up until after the attacks occurred.
Right. Right.
And so one of the things we do is we work with village security teams, not the police, not the military. We work with the village security teams because they're the first line of defense. And we notify them. Say, okay, do we put up enough men to thwart off an attack, or how can we evacuate as many people as possible? And we've started installing village alarm systems where we can. So like a solar powered hooked up to a battery, you have like a big siren, and then you hit a button, goes off. So we're able to send a warning and trying to save as many lives as possible.
Wow. Good. This is all good stuff. And you guys need more. This stuff has to not just be warned about. That's like the bare minimum, is to warn people about it. And I'm glad you guys are at least doing that on the ground. It's crazy that the government just doesn't show up. They don't show up. And you were telling me that there's some government officials who will even help supply weapons to these terror squads.
Well, we have very circumstantial evidence that this stuff occurs. So what we've seen a lot of and heard a lot of is that, let's say there's a Nigerian military compound up north. Weapons just happen to disappear for a night for an attack, and then the weapons are returned back to the military the next day. We've seen instances of that happening. We know that there are Nigerian politicians that are helping fund raise for these attacks. Some very radical Nigerian politicians are doing this. And there is government complicity. And, and that's why they're spending so much money trying to counter the narrative.
Yeah. And there's several things we still need to talk about. People need to understand about the government stuff, because we've talked about it, but we're going to show some examples. Before we do that, were there other things related to like victim stories that you wanted to share before we launch back into the government side of things?
So what you're about to see is me in a IDP camp in Benue State, Nigeria. Now, it's me walking through this video, but I'm showing you these people were living in garbage bag tents. And you'll see some examples of this. So what you're going to see is, this is me walking through an IDP camp in Benue State, and this is what Christians are living in. Now, before we came along, they were living in these garbage bag tents, and then we were able to provide them with better housing, with actual roofs, and build a concrete slab and a better shelter that they could live on, rather than just laying on the dirt in these garbage bag tents. And what I'm saying does not do it justice. The picture will do it justice. So check this out here.
Hi, this is Judd Saul with Equipping the Persecuted. We just arrived at the camp in McCurdy in Benue State. And we're here to check out some of the fruits of your giving that have happened here, and some solid structures that have been put up in this camp that have replaced these mosquito net tents. And I'm going to switch the camera around and show you. So what you're looking at is our structures that Equipping the Persecuted has built that have given these people shelter to live in. And if you see the black spots that are on the ground, these are places where mosquito net tents used to be. And so now they have a well, they have water, and they have solid structures to live in now. Now I'm going to walk down a little bit here. I'm going to walk down a little bit and kind of show you, because there's a couple remnants of the mosquito net tents that were in this camp. You know, a little bit of money goes a long way in a place like this. But I'm going to show you what people are living in and still in many, many other camps here in Nigeria, so you get a solid example of what's happening here. Say hello to our guard. That's our guard, Desmond, keeping an eye out for us. What a great guy. Good afternoon, Ma. All right, so I'm going to switch the camera. So over here is what the majority of these people used to live in until we came through and built them solid shelters. So they've gone from this to these, where they actually have a roof above their heads. They have individual spaces and places they can actually live. And they went from this to this. And with just a few funds, they've transformed the lives of thousands of these persecuted Christians. Thousands of people have been affected by your giving, and we were able to make their lives better.
Wow. Wow. That's to see them. You know, this is why I had asked you, like, bring some video, bring some footage, something we can show people, because hearing the numbers just doesn't do it. It just doesn't do it. These people, in other words, that were in those little tent type things, they were actually in a village where they had a place they stayed. And then they were driven from that through Muslim terrorists doing jihad, doing holy war, which is part of Islam. And then they are getting some aid from you guys. It's still not what they had. It's still not as good as what you'd like for them to have. And can I ask a question about this? There's an armed guard that we saw there. Is there anything keeping this place from being targeted as well? Or is it just that kind of like having an armed guard?
No, that's our security. That's armed security that we have to pay for to travel with us wherever we go.
Okay, so they're not even part of the village. Like, what is there anything keeping the village itself safe?
No, the Nigerian government does not protect these camps. This is just one of many. Like I said, there's 3.5 million Christians living in places like that, in those garbage bag tent things. But we came across that camp, and at one point there were 5,000 people living in those garbage bag tents. Until we showed up and we provided them much better proper shelter. There were 500 people a year dying in that camp because of disease and because of the sanitary conditions. And so we came in, we drilled them a well, we built them shelter that they could live in. And unfortunately, these villages, no, they're not protected by the Nigerian government. And in many instances, sometimes they're, these people are vulnerable and they are targeted by very bad people. Criminal element, and then even some of the terrorists come back and wreak havoc on these camps.
But here in the U.S., we have a Second Amendment right. We have a right to bear arms, to defend yourself. That right has been curtailed in some places, but not Nigeria. There isn't a right at all. There's basically, you had that armed guy. He'd be the only guy, either him or someone breaking the law, who would have a weapon.
Well, that's the thing, is that these terrorists are running around Nigeria breaking Nigerian law. There's no Second Amendment. They're running around with AK-47s and rocket-propelled grenade launchers on motorcycles. They don't get arrested for breaking the gun laws. But it seems like the law-abiding citizens and the Christians of Nigeria that try to acquire weapons and try to defend themselves, they're the ones that get punished.
Craziness. Craziness.
And so they're not allowed to defend themselves, and then the Nigerian government itself is failing to protect them.
Right.
And the thing is we're not talking about in the case of Benway in the area that I was just in. Okay. They're next to a fairly large hub, a decent sized city where there is police and military resources that could go protect these people. They're just not deployed.
Should we talk about the government now? Is now the right time for that?
Sure.
Okay, so one of the things that stood out to me, there's two things that really stood out to me from when we've talked about this stuff. One is the government openly denying that things are happening. And the other one was the mixed response from, like, say, the U.S. In some cases, you have people in U.S. government leadership trying to actually draw attention to Nigeria and the slaughters that are happening there. And the fact that their own government, it's a humanitarian crisis. This is a major, major issue. But then on the other side, you have some government guys who are, whether they're doing this for money or they're doing it because they're ignorant, because they're just like talking heads and they just smile and say things, I don't know. But they're actually repeating terrorist talking points about what's going on in Nigeria, thereby spreading lies and helping re-victimize and further victimize people in that area. So which one do you want to talk about first?
Well, we can talk about what's going on in regards to that. So the Nigerian government has a vested interest in not doing anything to protect Christians. And their vested interest is if they acknowledge genocide that's going on under their watch and they get designated as a country that's allowing genocide to happen, they lose funds. They lose funds from the World Bank. They lose funds from several international organizations. They don't get loans like they're supposed to until that is dealt with. And there's a lot of money, even in a country like Nigeria, which you think is very poor, but there's a lot of money being dumped into lobbyists and politicians to keep the status quo. And there's a lot of financial interest because, one, Nigeria is one of the largest, Nigeria is the most populous country in Africa, 220 million people. Nigeria is also one of the wealthiest countries in terms of natural resources in the land and also out in the sea with all their oil. So there is billions upon billions of dollars flowing through Nigeria, but it's all at the top. And it's all through corrupt politicians, lobbyists, and self-interest and, self-interests amongst the billionaire and elite class. And they could give a rat's rear end about what's happening to the Christians on the ground.
Right. There's like an aristocracy there they're the ones that have the money, have the power, and there's no self-interest reason for them to do anything else other than just status quo, right?
Exactly.
Now, we can create self-interest. We'll talk about that a little bit later in the video. We can create self-interest for those people where it will become in their own interest to do something about it instead of not. We'll talk about that. But yeah, so the government has this sort of elitism kind of like thing going on. How much of it, though, is also Islam, basically Islam being in the government, like government officials just being Muslim and for that reason thinking, no, we kind of want to eradicate or convert, the Christians?
Well, that's why ever since you've had the three last presidential terms, right? Not presidents, but the presidential terms have been Muslim tickets, Muslim president, Muslim vice president. And that is where you've seen a major shift in the rise of attacks occurring is when they started gaining full absolute political power.
Right. So in Nigeria, in Nigeria, they need Christians to run for office. They need Christians to get elected into office. They need Christians to be running the country. Like that's necessary for the safety of the people, because guess what? The Muslims will be safe in a Christian country.
And that's a thing theologically that our mission's also trying to correct. So one of the other things we do is we have a pastor's conference we hold every year with over 1,000 pastors. And we are teaching these pastors to get involved in politics, to get involved in the culture, and to get rid of this pietistic teaching that came into Nigeria with some early missionaries in the early 1900s.
Right. And when you say this pietistic, you mean this idea of like, that's not our kingdom, let's not get involved. And it may not be the kingdom of Christ, but there's a whole lot we can do of good that we can do for our neighbors and loving them by getting involved.
But somewhere down the line, these Christian pastors, it doesn't matter which denomination, were taught that getting involved in politics was a sin. They were taught that getting involved in politics was a sin. And you can look at the fruit of that bad theology because they weren't worried about politics. We're not going to get involved. It's dirty. It's messy. Well, that created a vacuum. And what filled that void? Islam. It allowed Islam to fully take control and dominate the country when Islam is only 50% of the population. You have the other 50% of the population, which is Christian.
Wow. Well, it wouldn't be hard for them to just change things if they just mobilize themselves. They just get involved.
Yes, if they mobilized and they joined together and they united amongst the various Christian tribes and said, you know what, we're sick and tired of this, and they start putting people in office and putting and taking back political power. But what's happened is because of the last three presidential terms have been Muslim tickets, Muslim chiefs of security, you've seen Christians get demoted. You've seen Christian generals get sacked and replaced with Muslim commanders. And that's what's happening right now as we speak. In fact, there was a major shift in the Nigerian security apparatus where some decent generals have just been sacked and replaced with Muslims.
Wow. So there's a political movement going on that is very successful right now, along with that is maybe even the bigger concern than the individual attacks that are going on, because if that was fixed, then these attacks could be dealt with. But this is
correct.
Probably the government is the bigger problem than even these murder squads, even though they're obviously, a massive, unspeakably huge problem. But one could be the solution to the other, not the other way around. Yeah.
I firmly believe that. And that's why I'm encouraging people to stand up and call for U.S. intervention on behalf of persecuted Christians in Nigeria to get international and U.S. pressure on the Nigerian government to intercede and act. You know, but the thing is, it's not just a political solution. There are people on the ground that are dying, starving, and hurting. So we need help on the ground, but we also need help here politically in the U.S.
Right. And we'll get to the action steps part of this video. If you guys are nervous about it, just click to the timestamp. This is the action steps. You'll go straight there. But we'll get there at the end of the video. Specific exact things that can be done. If you have no money at all, you can totally do this. This isn't just about that. But we'll have that for you guys. We want to mobilize people to make a difference. And if you're in Nigeria, maybe you're like a 14-year-old in Nigeria watching this video, and today's the day you decided, I'm going to become the president one day for the Lord Jesus Christ. And I'm glad you saw this video and this inspires you. We need to start changing the mentality of the churches in that country. And this is funny because it's not funny, it's ironic because we're going through similar needs in the U.S. of trying to get Christians, I think, more politically involved. But the urgency in Nigeria is greater. So the government, I think I understand the dynamics that are going on there. And we see that this is all Islamic jihad waged on different levels. But the talking points of the government, they'll go in public and they'll do like press releases and stuff, and they'll say stuff that simply is not true, right? What could you have? I don't know if you have any clips of this that you could play or show us, or maybe quotes. Here's the claims they make versus reality, and just help people see this, because lots of people, like when I first started posting about Nigeria on X, where I post the most often, I got responses that were talking points from the Nigerian government, where people are like, no, this is overblown, it's not really true, and this and that. So can you like maybe give a couple of those talking points and respond to them? We've done a couple already.
Okay, so what I'm about to show you is, this is President Tinubu of Nigeria dismissing genocide claims. So you see, as Tinubu dismisses genocide claims, says no religion is under siege. And he says, let me say this clearly. Nigeria is a proud sovereign nation built on the faith and resilience of its people. Here, no faith is under siege. No community is excluded. Our churches, mosques, and traditional shrines stand side by side, not as rivals, but as symbols of unity that bind us. That's the president of Nigeria.
How many was it? 19,000 churches
have been destroyed? 19,000 churches have been destroyed.
This is unspeakably evil what he's doing. This is the man who needs to save these people. And instead, he turns a blind eye to their destruction, installs people in positions of power who will continue to propagate the same problems, and then lies to the world about it. Oh, evil, evil man.
It's a lie from the pit of hell. And the whole thing is that Christians are under siege. Because what we haven't talked about yet, Mike, is the north of Nigeria that has already been conquered by Muslims is subjugating Christians to jizya.
The tax.
The tax. They have put them under Sharia law.
Right. The original mafia was Islam. They're like, hey, you need protection. This is protection money. But you're protecting yourself from them by paying them. So the jizya tax, yes, it's official in Islam. You got to pay money because you're not Muslim, or else we're going to come and destroy you.
So what's going on is these Christians are living as second-class citizens. And if they don't pay, guess what? Their wives get raped. They get their houses destroyed if they can't pay the jizya. They can't gain any government position. They can't gain any major job in the Muslim-controlled areas. They're living as second-class citizens. So while Tinubu is sitting here saying, oh, it's unity, you know, diversity. We have Christianity and Islam living side by side. No. Under Islamic rule and Sharia law, the Christians are living as second-class citizens, and they are being extorted to death up in the north.
And the reason, one reason why I think Nigeria is important is because this is only a case in point for the broader world to understand what Islam is and does. This would be the plan in the U.S. This would be the plan in Canada, or more likely sooner in France or Spain, or England. It's just a matter of time. If they gain power, this is what they have to do because it's in their holy texts. This is what they're supposed to do.
Yeah, and what makes this unique is this is real life jihad taking place. Okay, so what's happening in Nigeria is what's going to happen in England 30 years from now. 30 to 50 years from now. They move in peacefully. Everything's nice. They populate. They get political control. Then after a while with the political control, they start the killing. And they start moving people out of where they lived and start dominating and taking control of territory. This is Islam 101. And you have to be a complete moron to not see it. And then to have President Tinubu come out and say, oh, everything's wonderful. People are living in unity. Well, 19,000 churches destroyed, over 100,000 Christians completely massacred, not to mention the hundreds of thousands that have died as an aftermath of those attacks because of starvation and disease. You can't tell me that there's not a genocide taking place because the evidence is there. The dead bodies don't lie. The communities completely destroyed and sacked don't lie. You tell me.
Man, let's tell everybody. Let's do that. How about we do that? We need to tell everybody. Yeah. Christians everywhere need to start talking about this. It needs to be known. And, hold on. I've come to my idea on that one in a minute. But there was actually a video you showed. I don't know if you brought it with you for today, that had an American politician echoing terrorist talking points. And I wonder if you could, do you have that with you?
All right. So what you're about to see is Massad Boulous. Okay, for those of you who probably don't know who he is, this is Tiffany Trump's father-in-law. This is the father of Tiffany Trump's husband, and this is who Donald Trump named envoy to all of Africa to handle African affairs. And you have Massad Boulous just last week regurgitating the same talking points of the Muslim terrorists and the Nigerian Islamic government. And this is a little video that a guy put together juxtaposing the same talking points actually being used by a politician that supports terrorism and Massad Boulous saying the exact same thing. So you have to ask yourself, where are these talking points coming from? This doesn't make any sense. So without further ado, this is the video.
What is the position of U.S. governments regarding this?
Criminality is a criminality. It has no bound, it has no color, it has no religion.
Terrorism has no color and no religion and no tribe.
We can never get it right until we no link it to any religious group.
It's not about religion.
This has never been a serious religious issue and should not be.
You know, we're not very good at keeping records, but it's quite possible that right now even more Muslims are being killed than Christians.
We even know that Boko Haram and ISIS are killing more Muslims than Christians.
These are areas where there have been ethnic clashes. Herders and farmers.
There are other incidents that happen to be in the Middle Belt, for example, where farmers are located. Most of these farmers happen to be Christian, and some herdsmen are going through, and they have these incidents.
Someone made some interesting edits, but the thing is that this video reveals something that's super, super important. I honestly think the Muslims are laughing it up. They understand us a lot better than we understand them as far as Westerners go. And they know that they can just play these games. And the truth is we cannot play games. Like this envoy needs to be called to account for this. Like, what you are doing, sir, is getting people killed. You're repeating the talking points from the terrorists. You have no idea what you're talking about. The idea that it's not an ideology, or that it's not... Terrorism is always an ideology. There is no terrorism without ideology behind it. You can't try to wipe away the idea. If you don't address the ideology, you don't address the terrorism. It's just insane.
And I want to address something else that's said in the video. So what you hear people say is farmer-herder clashes. Farmer-herder clashes. The Fulani Islamists come from a nomadic herding tribe. They herd cattle. The problem is that they take their cattle and purposefully march through Christian farmland and villages, stopping and killing all their crops. And then in the process, if one of them gets mad at somebody or they say something bad, they'll come in and use that as justification to go kill a bunch of Christians, and then they steal all their land. So there's a half-truth. Yes, it's herders. But the problem is that the herders are now attacking entire areas that aren't farmland. They're attacking villages, destroying churches, killing as many Christians as possible in the process. It has nothing to do with herding. So they're using a bit of a half-truth. Yeah, farmer, herder, but the farmers are Christians. The herders happen to be Fulani ethnic militia with a radicalized Sunni form of Islam that tells them to turn Nigeria into a caliphate and kill anything that gets in its way. That's just so they say herders, but they don't say herders that are Sunni radical Islamists that are hell-bent on destroying anything that gets in their way and turning Nigeria into a caliphate. They just kind of omit that truth.
Right. It's deliberate, intentional deception to avoid the reality of the problem so that Islam won't look bad.
Exactly. They always do evil, evil, evil. And then the crazy thing is, so let's say there's like a string of attacks. They'll attack people for a month. And then the Nigerian government says, hey, calm down. Everybody calm down. They'll go and they'll have an interfaith peace dialogue done by the exact people that have been doing the killing. And then a week later, they'll go back to killing again. It's a dog and pony show of all this semantics of, no, we really don't mean this. We really want to get along with one another. Let's have interfaith dialogue meetings. So we look good to everybody, but it's all a farce. It's just one big lie.
Well, I'm glad you're helping expose it. This is important that we do this. Yeah. So this happened it was less than 2 weeks ago. You get the terrorist talking points and then repeated by the U.S. envoy, who you said is Tiffany Trump's father-in-law. What's his name again? It's
Massad Boulous.
Massad Boulous?
Mm-hmm. He's Lebanese, Lebanese American. He actually lived in Nigeria in the southern part in Lagos and did business there. You know, when these guys come to Nigeria, guys like Massad Boulous and others, they're not going to the Middle Belt where Christians are being killed. They're not going to the dangerous areas. They're going to the fancy hotels. They're smoking cigars, having a little bit of bourbon, hanging out with the rich guys in Nigeria and the politicians, and they do not set foot into real Nigeria.
Right. So he's just repeating talking points. He does not actually know what's going on. They have not done some sort of examination of anything. It's just like rich dudes drinking and smoking in their fancy hotels, telling each other stories. Then he goes out and presents it to the world, and he's made a friend, and he's made a connection.
He's made a friend. Well, what's Mesut Boulous' biggest interest? It's not protecting Christians. It's money.
It's
money and financial money and financial interests.
Yeah.
And that's why we are laying pressure on our U.S. government. Thank God we have senators and congressmen that are stepping up to the plate and calling for action. And now's the time to strike while the iron's hot.
Who's doing good? What are the names of some guys in our government that are doing good on this?
Congressman Nancy Mace. Chris Smith has been the biggest champion for Christians in Nigeria for years. He was doing it before it was cool. And Senator Ted Cruz. Senator Chris Smith has drafted legislation, a House resolution to designate Nigeria as a country of particular concern. And then Ted Cruz on the Senate side has come out with stronger legislation, actually calling for sanctions. And I am more in favor of Ted Cruz's legislation calling for sanctions because it has more teeth than a CPC. But I think you can do both.
Yeah, let's talk about that real quick. Okay, so let's say that we can right now, today, everybody watch this video, push forward sanctions. There's going to be action steps, okay, for how you guys can do this. But if we can push for sanctions, tell us what real world impact this has on Nigeria so that people will understand how it's not just like a political in name only kind of solution.
They need to call their representatives and their senators and tell them to intervene on behalf of persecuted Christians. If you're calling a congressman, tell them to sign on to Chris Smith's legislation that he's put forward on Nigeria.
Well I'm going to walk them through that in just a second. I mean,
okay, yeah.
What are, like, itemized for us? What do sanctions do if we're successful?
Okay.
What does it
do? Okay, all right. So by sanctioning the Nigerian government, what that does is, one, it prevents a lot of money coming from the U.S. going into Nigeria with bad actors. It stops them from the politicians and even the rich terrorists from vacationing and going to certain places. It monitors their money flow, what's going on. It even stops money flow going to them. And it also triggers other international agencies to not do business with the people that have been sanctioned. So this will be real financial hurt to the bad actors, which is what I'm all for. And that's under Ted Cruz's legislation.
Okay, so if we want to help with this, here's what you guys can do. Let's talk about action steps right now. One of the action steps, we've got like four specific action steps that we're going to ask everybody at least consider doing. So the first one is this. Call your congressman and senator. And the way you can do this, we're going to make it real easy for you. You go to congress.gov, right? Right now, you can scroll down. You can do it right now while you're watching the video. Scroll down to the video, open a new tab or something. But congress.gov, and you're going to, then on the website, you'll scroll down lower. You'll see a spot where you can enter your state. You're going to enter your state, and then it will show you on screen who your representatives are. Each one of those is a link. Each picture is a link you can click where you can then send an email to them. Now, the email we've already written for you. It's in the video description on this video. You can cut and you can paste it. You can tweak it. You can change it, whatever. It's just about numbers. The more people reaching out to them, the more of their voting constituents reaching out to them, the more likely they are to take action on this. And so this is real world impact. Yeah, congress.gov, scroll down. On that website, enter your state, then you'll email your representatives using the email form that we have down below. That's action step number one. I encourage everyone to do that. It's free. It'll take you like 5 minutes because you have to click a little bit here and there, but we try to make it as easy as possible for you. There's action step number two, which is you go to equippingthepersecuted.org, and there's two reasons to do this. Actually, there's three reasons. One, people going to the website will increase its foot traffic, and then the algorithms will help it get to more people. Number two, you can there find out what's really going on because it will link you to other sources that will show you more and more and more of what's going on in Nigeria, the truth about what's happening there. And three, you guys can offer support. As far as I can tell, I try to do my diligence here. As far as I can tell, Judd Saul's the real deal. Equipping the Persecuted is like legit. There's a bunch of lame organizations pretending that they're making a difference in Nigeria, trying to get your guys' donations. Okay, it's real. They're happening. And you know the names of some of them. I don't want to throw them under the bus for all the work they do, but they're not helping Nigeria, and some of them are pretending to. And you guys are actually on the ground. You're doing the early warning systems. You guys are actually building shelters for people. You're actually trying to create change, long-term political change in the government through encouraging pastors and Christians to get rid of that piety view of being disconnected from all these types of issues. So support them if you guys are interested. I would, that's, this is who I would support to help with what's happening in Nigeria. Please consider supporting if it's on your heart to do so here. And also know there's links to information. You can see Truth Nigeria at the top of the screen there. That's an actual link to a ton of information about what's actually happening on the ground, actual journalistic information there. Okay, step number three is for you guys to pray. Please be praying for the Christians that are there. Pray for their safety. Pray for the confusion and even destruction of these Muslim terrorist murder squads. Pray that government would start doing its job and not rebelling against God by refusing to be a terror to the wicked. And pray that the Christians would actually replace these evil government workers. Just pray that God would do amazing things and that he would do them right away. And the fourth action step is this: make a video or a post and direct people to equippingthepersecuted.org. And you guys can make this pretty easy. In fact, maybe you can give them the words to use in their post right now. Would you be able to just give like a quick little 10, 20 second thing that they could say, to inspire them? Because what we're doing is we're trying to create social media. Yeah. This is a very intentional, guys. This is real strategies here, okay? If 5,000 people make posts about Nigeria and the Muslim slaughters that are happening there, and you put it up on your personal Facebook or Twitter, or you put it up on Instagram or whatever, if we all do this, the end result is it pushes in all of the algorithms everywhere. It pushes this stuff to the forefront, and then it causes there to be more awareness and more change. And that's what we need, because we have coordinated news agencies that are lying about this stuff, and our brothers and sisters are being killed because of it. So what would you want them to say in a video that they did? Or should I be the one to do that?
No, I would say this. Start the video off with saying 90% of all Christian persecution deaths worldwide have occurred in Nigeria over the last 10 years. This year alone, 7,000 Christians have been killed since January 1st, 2025. Over 35 Christians are killed per day in Nigeria. And I'm doing something about this right now. I'm going to equippingthepersecuted.org. I'm donating and I'm taking action. And I'm calling on the rest of you to do the same. And I'm calling on the rest of you to contact your congressman, your senator, and pray and intercede on behalf of persecuted Christians in Nigeria. Go to equippingthepersecuted.org and become part of the solution and actually help persecuted Christians instead of just talking about it.
Amen. Listen, you guys could even just clip that and do a reaction to it if you want. I will not copyright strike anything you do. And that is awesome. Let's just spread the word. You can even just do a text post and then try to, connect people to the number one, create awareness. Every Christian needs to start talking about Nigeria. Every Christian needs to start talking about Nigeria. And number two, direct to an organization that's actually helping the situation on the ground. And you're not safe doing it. We don't know what will happen to you. And I hope that you and your teams will be safe. But dealing with persecution on the ground in real ways isn't safe. It's inherently an unsafe task. That's just the way it is.
Yeah. We go by God's grace and by God's mercy. And I'd like to ask the rest of your audience, please keep us in your prayers on a daily basis. Add us to your prayer list. Not just pray for us, Americans that are going to Nigeria, but I really want you to pray for our team that's on the ground that is risking their lives every single day to bring aid to persecuted Christians, and our guys at truthnigeria.com that have to go into hiding every so often because they're speaking out too much and the Nigerian government doesn't like it. We need your prayers. Besides your giving, we need prayers. And we just add us to your prayer list, please.
Yeah, absolutely. And other people who maybe are influencers who are interested in perhaps interviewing Judd Saul or someone from the team, reach out to them. You guys, we need to spread the word. We need to spread the word. We can do it. Let's do a coordinated effort and focus on this for a little while. And then we can make a huge difference. And then the ripple effect is, the truth is, I want to change Nigeria, but I also think, again, Nigeria is a case in point for this is Islam, and this is what Islam will do to the entire world. And Nigeria's not even done yet. This is just step two. Step three is total, complete Muslim domination and control. That's step three, and they're on their way there. They're on their way there. And we're, a lot of these Western countries, we're in step one, or we're between steps one and two. And we just got to realize that Islam is, I think, the greatest threat to the world that there is today. Do you think that's accurate?
I think it's very accurate. I think it's very accurate to say because, and I get in trouble for this theologically, and I might make some of your people mad by saying this, but everyone says that Christianity explodes amidst persecution. Well, that's not the case when it comes to when Islam takes over an entire nation. Christianity shrinks under Islamization. It doesn't explode.
Right. I think this is true, and it's good for us to know. Okay, there are times where persecution has been used by God in great ways.
Yes.
But let's be real. It does. You know, when Paul had to flee a town because he was being persecuted, it's not like that town got more godly as a result. Like, they did not get apostolic ministry. He fled. Christians were dispersed out of Jerusalem because of the persecution. It decimated the church that was there. And yes, it did spread them out, but only because they could run to other places where they could stand up and preach. But when you have control over an entire region with targeted persecution going on, you don't have the thriving growth of the church, typically speaking. Like, even places like China, where you have the four self-churches and all this government control, it's the church would be thriving a lot more if it wasn't for the persecution. There would be far more right. Christians and churches in China if not for the persecution. And that's healthy for us to know that. I know that the blood of the martyrs is the seed of the church, and that's true.
Yes.
Because they're the only ones bringing forth the gospel in those hostile environments. So they're the only reason why the church survives at all. But, you know, had they not been martyred, they could have preached the gospel a lot more.
Yeah, but I'm going back to the threat of what happens is that once Christian nations that have been completely Islamized, mm-hmm. the Christian population shrink. They are second-class citizens. They get put under jizya. You don't see an explosion of Christianity.
Right.
And really, it wasn't until the Crusades where they came in by force and defeated the Ottoman Empire and pushed them back. That's when you saw these Christian nations become Christianized again, but it wasn't without war.
Right. Yeah, because Islam is a religion of physical violence in order to ensure that they are in power.
Correct.
So, yeah, what else can you do in response to that except by matching it?
And so in Nigeria, I just want to let your audience know there is hope. There is definite hope, and the tide can turn, but all it takes is willpower. And it takes all of us joining together and being a voice for the voiceless and sticking up for them. And that is what keeps me going. There is hope in this, and we can turn the tide around. I would rather be helping Christians in Nigeria rebuild their lives, you know, spread the gospel further, start new schools, and help watch a country prosper instead of being subjugated by these godless thugs with AK-47s.
Amen. Let's make it happen.
Amen, brother. Thank you.
Thank you, Judd. Thanks, man. Thank you, everybody else who's watching. Listen, you guys watching this, who've taken action steps. I know a bunch of you have, and I'm really grateful for you. This coming year, I'm thinking more and more about mobilizing Christians in order to make real world transformation. Not only preaching the gospel, primarily with the gospel. That is the primary thing, will always be the central primary thing. But if we isolate ourselves to only speaking the gospel and don't think about addressing other things, letting the gospel spill into all that stuff, I think we're making a mistake. And so this is part of the mobilizing. I will never bring before you someone who I don't at least have a good faith reason to think is handling funds properly, is doing real work, is actually being integrous and honest about the kind of stuff that's going on. And I've tried to confirm that with Judd. This is why my first step when I found out about Nigeria was I'm like asking friends, asking people who know more about it than me, like, who can I trust on this topic? Who's like doing good work? Isn't just using this to prop themselves up in ministry, which I hate that stuff, man. And so, Judd, I'm thankful for you, man. And I pray that that God uses this for great things.
Now, thank you for having me, and God bless you for talking about this subject and bringing me on. I can't thank you enough for this. You're very brave for doing this, and may God bless your ministry.
No, man, it don't take much bravery for me. In fact, the fact that people feel like it does to me is going, that's how weak we've been, is that this takes bravery for me to do this. Let's change that. Yeah.
Amen.